Mazibulo Changa.
It is a privilege for me to be sitting next to Dr. Jerry Gule, who is the CEO of the IPM, which is the Institute of People Management. Dr. Gule?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for joining us today for this leadership conversation.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you for the invite.
Great. So tell me, as a CEO of IPM, what does your role entail? And what does IPM do?
Yeah. Let me start with your second question. The Institute of People Management is an organization that is celebrating 78 years in 2023. So we've been around a while, and our core business is really to develop and to advocate for the people management profession, the HR and people management professionals.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
So what does your role entail?
Yeah. So my role, I'm the cheerleader.
Yeah.
I call myself the cheerleader of the team.
Yeah.
And the advocate and the face of the institution, they advocate for the profession. I'm very passionate about that, to make sure that indeed we uphold the standards that we need to be upholding in the HR profession.
Mm. What type of standards are you talking about?
Yeah, so the standards involve being ethical in our practice, making sure that what we do is what is really valid and what is adding value, not only to the employees of organizations, but just to make sure that our conduct as professionals is above board. That's what we advocate. That's what we want to see. Those are the standards that we want to hold our members to.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So you've been around in terms of the leadership roles.
Yes.
So tell me about your career journey.
Yes.
How did it all start?
I wouldn't even say that is something that I planned. When I undertook my university education, I was trained to be a teacher. I trained as a teacher, which is something I love, but I could only teach for only two semesters because my university came knocking and said, hey, we want you to come back.
Yes.
And that then really set me on this particular leadership journey. But I was reflecting, I mean, I look back at my high school days, even before I was 19, when you have all the students around you saying, when are you going to be our leader?
Yeah,
and sometimes leadership is thrust at you. And that was my experience, that people, you know, you would have this, you try to resist, but you have this responsibility. But once I left teaching, after two semesters, joined the university, I then joined the division of that particular university, which was then the University of Swatini today, or Swaziland then, Botswana at the time. University of Botswana in Swaziland.
Yeah.
I was in the extension unit of that university teaching. Mainly I was recruited to participate in management development for public and private sector employees, of course. And that opened my eyes to a different world altogether.
What type of world are we talking about?
So we are talking about a world where if you are given a position of authority, it's actually not for you to be basking in that position and to be throwing your weight around. But you realize that it's a responsibility for the people that you lead, as well as a responsibility to make sure that the organization actually gets value from everybody who's involved in the organization. So that's the world that I'm talking about. And it's been an exciting world to be part of that. One of the things that I really enjoy is to see people that I work with, to see them grow and reach higher levels of in their own careers. That to me is satisfying, and that's why I'm in this particular profession of human resources management.
Yes. So how did you transition then from starting to be a teacher?
Yeah.
Worked at a university.
Yeah.
You worked in corporate.
Yes.
I understand that you worked in the petroleum industry at some point.
Yes.
So talk me through that.
Yeah. Well, let me start by saying this thing, but say it in a tongue-in-cheek, man. I took advantage of affirmative action. Let's just put it that way. So I ran around.
So there was an opportunity, and you were like, I'm not going to miss this opportunity.
I know, I'm not going to miss the opportunity. So so having left teaching, joined the university where I was for 15 years, and then decided I was finding that environment rather constraining in some ways, at least in the particular things that I wanted to achieve. So I joined the private sector, starting off as a training manager.
Yeah.
In those days, you then, you know, the next level was in the company where I was personnel manager, which was making sure that the records and everything else was correct.
Very administrative.
Very administrative. But then I was promoted into the role of heading the entire HR function.
Yeah.
I was in that role in this particular organization, which was a forestry company, for about, I think it was about, just about 5 years.
Yeah.
And then I decided, my wife, who had been in Swaziland as you know, because her family had moved there, wanted to come back to South Africa, and said, darling, this is where we go back. I'm going back home. And we ended up here. In fact, she was a DDG in one of the government departments. So I joined Standard Bank when I came here. From Standard Bank, I went to Bromo Foods, which was part of Cadbury.
How was the culture at Standard Bank?
I think at the time, Standard Bank was, like all South African organizations, had embarked on this challenge of transforming and becoming inclusive. So it was exciting, but challenging at times, because some people have to track screaming and shouting, not wanting to change. But once we have a leadership, and for me, I mean, I didn't spend a lot of time in it, but it was so fulfilling, because you had the old CEO of that organization leaving, we had a new CEO coming and saying, I want a culture. I want to build a team, and I want to build this particular kind of culture, because we're moving into, I joined just before the so-called year 2000. Eh?
Yes.
And there were a lot of changes, and banks were, of course, in the forefront of that. So it was an exciting time. Really putting in the DNA of what the leadership of that organization was going to be, being part of that. So I enjoyed my time there. Yeah.
So while you were in corporate, trying to climb the corporate ladder, you've occupied quite a number of leadership positions, and you've played a very instrumental part in the people management space. So tell me, what values should corporate South Africa entrench themselves when it comes to leadership?
Yeah. You know, the literature on leadership, from given where we've come from and how this thing was started, when it started, the whole thing around leadership development, leadership, you know, the management and all that, all military space, right? That's the case studies that we've had. I think in a modern world like we live in today, particularly in a world that has changed, and I think changed forever and will continue to change.
Mm.
For me, the values that leaders should embrace, should exude, integrity, being humble, being authentic, not being a fake, being who you are, presenting who you are, and being vulnerable. In other words, just
I love that, being vulnerable.
And I learned that from my team at this petroleum company that you referred to. It's so nice when people look beyond this is our leader and look to the person. And they can connect with the person.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful feeling. So those are the things. Don't try to be a Mr. or Mrs. Know-it-all or Miss Know-it-all. No, just be you. There are things you will know as a leader, and there are things you have no clue about.
Mm.
But you are surrounded with people who know,
because
you have brought them into the organization.
Yeah.
So rely on those people.
Definitely.
That's what I see. Those are the things that I think we should embrace as leaders. Of course, we must know the business.
Of course.
But in terms of a value that drives you, those outputs.
Integrity,
I would put those top notch.
Yes, definitely. And I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
So what challenges did you experience while you were in corporate as a leader?
Yeah. One thing that you learn as a leader is that people have different motives. And it sometimes amazes me.
Mm.
And I always question this. Why is it that we come looking, or people come looking for work, they get the work, and all of a sudden, something changes. Someone needs to tell me why that is the case. People behave like they are not. They become immature sometimes.
Yeah. And unprofessional.
And as a leader, that frustrates. Well, frustrated me, still continues to frustrate me, because you want to trust people to do what they promise to do.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not the case.
That's not the case.
And of course, you find the so-called corporate politics.
Let's get into that. Corporate politics.
Yes.
What does that look like? I mean, now we have your conversation. You've been in corporate. I've been in corporate.
Yes.
But to a young graduate, yes. to a person entering the space, the corporate space, and hearing about these terms, what does that look like?
Yeah. So, simply put, people bring hidden agendas to the workplace. And they don't disclose. And it therefore militates against what I've just said, which is be authentic. Don't be schizophrenic. Schizophrenic as a person, you are one thing outside, you are one. No, be you.
Be yourself. Mm.
And the corporate politics comes because I think it's just maybe the pie is too small. Therefore, people want to ingratiate themselves to the powers that be.
Yeah.
And therefore, I want to make the other person look bad. And in my view, I let people play the politics. I don't care about the politics.
Mm.
Yes, I care in the sense that if it affects, particularly now in the HR space, if it affects other people, then you have to confront it, right?
Mm.
And I did that.
Yeah.
I remember doing it as a new employee in one organization. I was almost fired within the first week. But I said, if that's what has to happen, that's what has to happen. But you need to stick to what is right. Yes, I need to stick to what is right. I'm not going to be used and I'm not going to be unfair to other people.
Yeah.
My role is my role. Your role is your role. If that's how you play your role, play it.
But allow me to play mine.
My role, yes.
Yes,
yes
definitely. Yeah. As professionals and give each other space
exactly.
to do that.
Yes.
Agreed. Mm. So what is people management and how important is that profession or people management in the corporate space?
Yeah. People management is so key because actually there is no organization without people. So if you mess up with your people, if you mess if you stifle the potential of your people, I think you are to a beating to nothing.
Yeah.
So it is core.
Mm.
Someone has said, you build the people and the people will build the business. So make sure that you take care of the people and allow them to reach to rise to their potential because they will help you to build the business.
Yeah.
People are vital. So people management really is about how do you treat your people in the workplace? And most importantly, it's not just vertical, also horizontal. What kind of colleagues are we in the workplace? It's important that employees also understand the importance of being collegial, being colleagues that are also genuine, not fakes, and not backbiting.
Mm.
Because what kills an organization is and just dampens the spirit is when there is negative energy. People are not being good colleagues.
Yeah.
So it's about that.
So corporate culture then is key.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
So globally, we faced a tumultuous period in the past 2 years with COVID-19. What did this mean for the HR professionals and leadership?
Yeah. let me start by saying HR professionals, in my view, let me talk maybe about our members.
HR body association.
Yes, they outdid themselves.
Yeah.
They
kudos played to the HR
such
professionals.
A critical role, not only taking care of the employees, but also taking care of communities. I salute them for that. It was a difficult, but of course, it's just to engender a spirit of, listen, guys, we've got to pull together here, bring the values. But they had to rise to the occasion because everyone was looking at them to say, now what do we do with this? Because it was all new, all novel. So they did well.
And then what does that then mean going forward for leadership and HR professionals?
Yeah.
This change that we've just undergone.
Yeah. I think the change, one, is irreversible. We have, in the past, we've always lamented, and some people still lament. I must tell you, it frustrates me to no end when people say, HR hasn't risen up to the so-called table. They are not at the table.
They're not getting a seat at the table.
They're not getting the seat at the table. I don't like that phrase because I think they are. Someone has said, if we are not at the table, then maybe you've got to force your way in. But I think they have, and they need to remain there.
Yeah.
And they need to. We don't need to lose that position, that position of influence.
Strategic partnership.
It is a strategic partnership, and they must continue to do that.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what kind of role can HR play at the seat at the table?
Yeah.
And what kind of drive and shift and value they can add to the organization.
Yeah. I do believe that, let's put it this way, organizations have people that add value and people who do not add value. Those people could be in HR, could be in finance, could be in IT. So all over the show, it's not just HR that doesn't add value. Sometimes some organizations don't see that function as adding value, but it adds immense value. We are talking now about the fact that we must ensure that there is well-being in the workplace, that there is a proper balance of what people do and their lives.
Personal lives, yes.
Their personal lives. And organizations that are going to attract the talent, which, by the way, they do through these professionals.
Mm.
Yeah. So if you look down upon these professionals who bring the talent and you don't put them, give them the authority that they deserve, I think you're undermining your own organization, the performance of the organization.
Mm.
HR is not
which
about
then stifles
just
the growth of the organization.
It's not just about people. Mm. HR professionals must also understand, how do we make money in this organization? How do we lose money in this organization? How can we then change? So I believe in HR professionals who walk out of their offices into where the work is happening.
Mm.
Yeah. With the sales team, with whatever team, but going out there, because you recruit, when you bring talent in, you've got to understand the conditions under which that talent is. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And talking about wellness, which I think is a very important part.
Yeah.
When it comes to employee well-being.
Yeah.
And just the well-being of the organization as well, because once the organization has good, well taken care of employees, employees are able to deliver better, employees are able to show up, the performance increases, and then the organization benefits.
Yes.
So how important is an inclusive workplace culture and connectedness?
Yeah, absolutely essential.
Yeah.
Particularly in a country like South Africa. Of course, in all countries. I mean, we've seen the nonsense that happens in other countries around just undermining other people.
Yeah.
And it's not about race. I was talking to a colleague. I mean, our attitude as African men to African women or to women in general.
Yeah.
My wife and I the other day were talking about the fact that you could be, my wife has a PhD and she's the smartest person in the house because hers is in demography and statistics and she did maths.
The
clever things. Mm. But here is the point, is that she could be walking down the street and she was saying, you know, you get undermined by almost everybody. As long as they are putting on trousers and they are called men, they look at this woman and they think they can just do anything. And this is my wife. I owe my respect. Of course I get angry when that happens. So what am I saying? I'm simply saying inclusivity is so critical in all, not just in the workplace, in communities. Because we've got to allow the equality that we talk about, particularly with things here in South Africa underpinned by the constitution.
Yeah.
But we have to change the attitude. Let me, just before I close this.
Yeah.
Our kids go to multiracial schools.
Yes.
You know who needs to transform first? Sometimes it's the parents.
That
who
takes
need to
the kids.
To ensure, allow that culture of inclusivity, what we say in private, in public, is actually itself inclusive. Because we may say one thing in public and do something completely different when we get to our private environment.
Mm.
My wife and I had that conversation, that if you send your kids to multiracial school, actually expect them to, can I use the word, to fall in love with anyone, and you must be comfortable with that. But there are people who say, no, it's not going to happen. So
Not
under my roof. So what am I saying? I'm saying it's critical.
Mm.
It's critical to allow the talent that we have in the country to blossom. All the talent, not just a section of the talent, all the talent that you have. So inclusivity is critical.
It's critical, yes. We are going to go to an ad break and then we'll be back shortly. I'm having a leadership conversation with Dr. Jerry Gule, who is the CEO of the IPM. Welcome to 2023. We're quite excited about this year. We are hosting the Brunch with Noma on the 25th of March, 2023. Our theme for this year is Be Unstoppable and Be Significant. We're quite excited. We've got a good lineup of speakers that will be sharing their knowledge, experience, and just words of wisdom and encouraging us to get geared for this year and be exceptional in the spaces that we operate in. So we will be showcasing the posters on our social media pages. Please do register for the Brunch with Noma that's coming up soon on the 25th of March. Welcome back to the Leaders in Conversation. I am having a conversation with Dr. Jerry Gule on all things leadership, corporate, and organizational culture. So getting right along, or moving right along, so a study that was conducted by Deloitte, The Power of People Reimagined, Shaping the Workforce of the Future. What are the key things we should consider as we shape this workforce of the future?
Yeah, the future is here, and the future keeps changing.
And the future is now.
The future is now.
Yeah.
I think we must understand the season, if I may say, where we are, and listen to the futurists, what they are telling us. Sometimes we don't want to hear those people. We hear what they say, and we say, no, this is unbelievable. The world is never, ever going to be like that. But I think in preparing the workforce of the future, let's understand the skills that are going to be required.
Yeah.
And therefore, our school system really needs to be jacked up to prepare the young people.
Because that's where it starts.
That's where it starts.
Mm.
That's where the mind is shaped.
Mm.
And that we know that the future is a future where technology is, we must understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Information and data
is
multiple. And you need to be able to interpret that data and to mine and to use it. So that's the future.
Yeah.
So our people must be analytic.
Yeah.
Because there's so much information being thrown at us. We must be able to think, by the way.
Yeah.
Because thinking, as you know, is not that easy.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy as we think it is.
Yes. We want people to collaborate. This new world of work. In fact, this new life is about collaboration. And I love what this management companies do, management consulting companies like Deloitte and the rest of them, because they really go out. If you look at the McKinsey stuff that has also come out now, very interesting. They are always doing this research. Someone was criticizing, and I was part of it, the WEF, the World Economic Forum, but they produce excellent research.
Yeah.
Whether we benefit from it or not. So this whole thing is about
information is available.
And that information should inform what is it that we do in our people development efforts in preparing for the future, which is now, making sure that we can mine it, we can live in it, we can thrive in it, but also thinking about 5, 10,
15,
I know
20.
COVID has also said don't have to, you know, so long-term your plans because they can change.
Things happen.
So our plans must be really flexible and must
agile.
Be agile. Yes.
Mm. Yeah. I love that. So recently the IPM held the conference last year in October, themed Beyond Digital. How important is digital transformation in the workplace?
It's, you know, I'm afraid to say that the countries and the companies that are really adapting, automating things that can be automated because of this agility that is required. Things, when information, companies that are able to interpret the information, to read the trends.
Yeah.
And that AI, technology, artificial intelligence, and all those things, automation that comes around, enables quick decision making. So all employees, in my view, must be comfortable with the use of technology. I know people who just don't want to be near that thing. But I think the new generation, the new employees that we're having, the so-called digital natives are going to be comfortable. But we must make sure that as organizations, we allow them.
And we prepare both generations.
Yes,
I think that's very important,
To prepare
the Gen Zs, the millennials, and still prepare the older generation.
Yes, and the older generation might allow themselves to be mentored by reverse mentoring, right?
Reverse mentoring,
To be mentored by the young ones because they know what they're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. I love that. Mm. So what type of leadership style is required in the new world of work and to support this digital transformation?
Yeah. First of all, if it's a digital age, the leadership must also be digital savvy, right? They must understand what's going on. They, as I said earlier, you're not going to know everything, but use the people around you, benefit from them. So the leadership style that we really is really a collaborative one. It's one where you are not afraid to say, I actually don't know this, to your team. And your team must be accepting of that also. They shouldn't. So there is an education that has to happen among employees. Because there was a time when the boss knows it all. And we use terms like the buck. Well, the buck has to stop somewhere. But I think the buck stops.
But more
the
of an autocratic style.
So it's my way or the highway. And you still hear these terms. I was in an institution that I won't name only towards the end of last year. And I heard this in their meeting. And I said, oh, it's a problem. So we need a leadership style that where people are accessible. When you say you have an open door, have an open door. We need people, we need a leadership style where communication change, changes completely. Memos are gone, right? You haven't received the memo.
Faxes, fax, no, I have not.
Fax machines are gone. So we must be versatile. We must go with the times, use the technology.
So what do you think, or what's your opinion on this notion that technology is there to replace people? So tell me, and how can we bring these two together in support of the digital transformation and in making the world of work better?
Here's the funny thing. Who makes the tech is the people. Who apply the tech is the people. It is true that technology helps us to do certain processes faster, quicker than any human being can. So what does that mean? That means we must, the first thing is people themselves must understand that the continuous development is key. Continuous training, upskilling yourself so that your skills, you are always required. It is true also that some jobs will disappear. So if the only skill you have is to do that job, therefore when technology comes in, you're going to be out of a job. But if you have been in a process of developing yourself, making yourself more valuable, you will transition. So digital transformation means we must also be transforming our own skills in order to keep up with what's going on.
So there's certain skills that are required for today and for the future. And then there's certain skills that will be obsolete.
So
it's up to one then to understand what are my skills currently, what are my skill sets currently, and what are the skills of the future? And where is the gap, and then fill the gap with personal development, right?
Definitely, that's what they must do.
So in your opinion, and based on your experience, where are we as South African corporates when it comes to digital transformation?
Like in all markets, you have laggards and you have people who just catch up so quickly. So it's the whole spectrum. There are organizations that haven't even started out of the starting blocks, but there are the others that are just
very far.
Look at them and saying, wow, these people are moving. They have moved. So it's the whole spectrum. There are false starts, of course, and it can be very costly. But if you learn from other organizations, hence the collaboration. I was very impressed to hear that a manufacturing company was working with a cellular company, a ITC company, exchanging talent. Can you imagine what happens there in terms of what these employees learn about improving processes? So companies must really be open. We are in an ecosystem, and we must accept that, and we must collaborate. I'm a big fan of collaboration.
Thank you for that. And I tend to agree with you when you say there needs to be a cross-pollination when it comes to organization. And because talent is talent. And talent can thrive in organization where, you know, they've created conducive environments for that talent to thrive. And that talent needs to be shared across the ecosystem.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. It must be shared. For South Africa Inc.'s sake.
I mean,
if we are going to be a thriving economy, we need all our organizations to thrive, right?
Of course.
Not a few.
Not a few. Yes, I agree. Yes, yes. I agree. So what skills are required for the future world of work?
Tech skills. Mm. Analytic skills. Mm-hmm. Communication skills. Because you're still going to be working with people.
Yes.
Yeah. You must be able to analyze, interpret what is in front of you. And you also must know where what's my network? Mm. Where can I go if I don't understand this?
Yeah.
So you might. Yeah. So the networking is important.
It's important
to know where you can find answers if you need to find those answers.
Yeah. I think interpreting data is becoming a big thing. Hey.
Yeah. Big data. Mm. Yes.
Big data analyst. Mm. Even in the HR professionals.
Yes. It is.
Yes.
It is.
So what kind of data would HR professionals be analyzing?
Yeah. So you're looking at lots of it. I mean,
yes.
HR professionals deal with our lives, right? All our records are there. So they, for instance, just who is in this organization? Yeah, that's the one
that's
thing.
That's data.
That's data. Mm. They look at, if you talk about succession planning, I mean, succession planning is not an overnight thing.
And it's not a thumbsucked exercise.
Who is successful and what makes our team successful? Which teams actually are trailblazing and which teams
are
not?
And that's based on data.
Yes. And why is that? By the way, you don't write off a team just because it's not performing.
Yes.
You've got to understand what are the factors that are causing my team to function like this. And that's data.
Mm. Right? Yeah.
And it must be objective data.
Objective data.
Yeah. And not, you can't just turn around and those guys are fools. No. Understand, you wouldn't have hired them in the first place.
Yeah. So there must be a reason.
There must be a reason.
Definitely, definitely. So where do you see the IP, the people management as a profession in the next 10 years? And we've seen the disruption that has been caused by COVID-19.
Yeah.
And we've seen how we, as you've indicated, that you know, the human capital, the profession really rised up to the occasion.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what's next to that we need to rise up to?
Yeah. Listen, the profession, I think, is still going to be there. The HR professionals and people management professionals are going to be there. But the things are changing. Teams are smaller. And in my mind, it's a challenge that I actually sometimes wonder.
Mm.
How are these teams going to cope? Because the workload hasn't changed.
Yeah.
It's actually increasing. Yes.
Mm.
So in the next 5 to 10 years, I think we'll even have smaller HR teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they should be able to harness all the technology that is there to support them, to help them.
Yeah.
And I think they will be more collaborative with the line functions.
Yeah.
I mean, we have organizations now that are decimating some of the middle management levels.
Yes.
And what is happening there, turning them maybe into coaches. And HR supports that. So so I think HR will still be there, will be coming along with the management team and the employees as they've done, but in a different configuration, because you won't be having hordes and hordes of administrators, strategic relationships that they'll be establishing with the business.
Mm. Any upcoming projects that the IPM is working on? Anything that is interesting that we should be looking forward to?
Yes, well, you can look forward to our next convention, which
happens.
I
cannot wait, guys, for IPM, the IPM conference, which happens annually.
Yes, which is going to happen once again, go back to Sun City.
Yes.
And this time it's going to be the 20th. Well, we'll have a golf day this time.
Yeah, oh, nice.
On the 19th of
November.
Am I invited? You are invited, yes. And that's the one thing. And of course, we can't wait for September. We're doing other things with our partners. We have a lot of partners who are working right now, and we hope we'll be able to launch it. You know that we work with the AI HR Academy, who come through the IPM. That's a big project. We want to see a lot more HR professionals coming through there to really develop themselves, adapt themselves to this digital thing that we're talking about, age that we're talking about.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. That was such a fruitful conversation with regards to digital transformation and just creating conducive environments for people and talent to thrive. And I think you've been a very instrumental leader, seasoned leader within the HR space. And we truly appreciate your work.
Thank you.
We see you, we recognize you, we acknowledge you.
Thank you
for gracing us with your presence.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Thank you so much. And this is the end of our conversation with Dr. Thierry Gule, who is the CEO of the IPM.